Hello, this is Jackie with Panama Relocation Tours. I want to welcome you to our Saturday Retire in Panama conference call. As you know, during this pandemic, because we've been in a quarantine and lockdown in Panama anyway, can't do anything else. Every Saturday, I've been doing this free conference call with interviewing some people that live around Panama, just to give you a glimpse of what it's like to live here in different areas. Some people I've interviewed in the city, some people in the mountains, and some people living by the beach. So it gives you an idea of what it's like for different people that have lived here. Some have lived here a short time, some have lived here a long time. So I try to get a really good variety. Tonight, we're waiting on Phil and Gloria, who live in Playa Ovarito, which is about 10 minutes outside of Las Tablas. Las Tablas is in the Azuera Peninsula. And so I'm just waiting on them to call in. And while I'm waiting on them to call in, I'm going to go ahead and take, we've got quite a few people lined up to ask a question, so I'm going to go ahead and take some of the questions. If you do have a question, all you need to do is press star 6. And that will put you right in line to ask your question. And so I'm going to take some questions while I'm waiting on Phil and Gloria. So I think I have James at area code 405. Go ahead.
Hi, Jackie. Good to talk to you again. I was wondering if you could discuss, or if it was okay, or you were comfortable with discussing Panama's current views on medicinal marijuana, how it's moving in the legal system. I saw that it was in the process, like supposedly like 3 years ago, but the political party didn't want to touch it just in case it might be hot water.
Well, this is actually what happened in July of 2016. Medicinal marijuana was approved by the legislature here in Panama, and then they turned it over to Panama's equivalent of like the FDA for them to write the rules and regulations for it. And the FDA, sort of Panama, they haven't written the rules and regulations of it, but it was actually approved, but it can't be used. It can't be used until the rules and regulations. And they've gotten input from a lot of different doctors. Some doctors said that they wanted it to be only for specific illnesses like epilepsy and certain things because they don't want it to get into a situation like it is in some countries where, oh, I stumped my toe. I need medical marijuana.
Right.
And, you know, oh, my head hurts. I need medical marijuana. Or, oh, I bruised my elbow. Right. I need some medical marijuana. And they don't want it to be like that. Now,
Very true.
We don't have the rules yet on what it's going to be. And it was put way on the back burner, of course, because of the pandemic. Our health department and like our equivalent of an FDA, their whole focus is on treating the COVID patients and deciding what is the best route for medication. So now,
with it being 4 years ago, though, that's a long back burner.
Yeah. Well, and see, that was a different president back then. We got a
right,
new president,
and,
new legislature, new everything. So it's not a priority. For them,
right.
It's not a priority.
Makes sense.
Now, marijuana is readily available, but it's not legal.
Right. My case, I'm a disabled veteran that can legally smoke it in my state. And whether or not I want to when I'm there, I haven't quite decided because I'm hoping I won't need it for the pain and everything and all that kind of stuff. But I'm a little nervous on whether or not there'll be other avenues that I can utilize there that I can't quite do so well in America with the VA here is absolutely terrible, as everybody knows. So, but yeah, thank you very much that hopefully they start working on something so we can kind of decide. But again, thanks very much. Have a good one and stay safe.
You're welcome. So, James, one other thing is every once in a while you could just go down to Colombia. It's about a one-hour flight to Colombia, and it's legal in Colombia. There you go.
Oh, yeah. Hey, there we go. I guess that would work.
Or move to Colombia.
I wouldn't want to, though. I'm really liking the idea of Boquete. We got everything planned. We're just waiting on our, you know, we got to wait for our passports, which now we can't even go get them because of the pandemic. They won't even let us unless it's life or death.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, man. It's big old pile of ready, but like we're completely ready and everything. It's literally just sitting there waiting for the paperwork. So we'll be there soon, though. We'll probably have a coffee or something in Boquete or something. My wife likes to do some art, so.
Good. We'll be waiting for you.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
So once again, I'm just waiting on Phil and Gloria. Phil and Gloria, if you're there, say something so I know you're there. I'm going to check on him on Facebook. Give me one second. Let me go to his Facebook page. And I even sent him a reminder. He did have a hard time getting in to the call yesterday. We did a trial run yesterday to make sure he could get on. It took a little while. Just a second. Let me write him. Okay, so while we're waiting on Phil and Gloria to join us, I'm going to go ahead with my next caller. Phil, are you there? No?
Hey, Jackie.
Okay. Is this Phil?
Can you hear me now?
Hello. I can hear you now, yes. Phil, I can hear you. You must be over at Anita and Greg's house. Still having a bit of trouble. Phil, I can't hear you. Try to call in again.
Try it now. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you just fine.
Okay. All right. Then I'm here.
Okay. Okay. So, fantastic. So, everybody, I want to welcome you to Phil, who, like I said, lives in Playa Uvarito, which is a beach community that's about 10 minutes outside of Las Tablas. So, Phil, if you could share with everybody when you moved to Panama and why you picked the area that you're in.
Okay, first of all, I guess I came to Panama on a vacation in 2006. It was a three-month vacation. I was here 3 weeks and ended up buying a house on the beach. Absolutely fell in love with the country. I've been to about 38 countries around the world. I've been all through Central America. Before I came to Panama, I was spending about 3 or 4 months every winter in Mexico. Then I went the last 2 years before I came to Panama, I went to Belize, loved Belize until I got to see the interior of the country and the lack of services there. So I came to Panama just on a vacation, and I spent about a week in Casco Viejo, the old quarter of Panama, fell in love with it. The architecture there, absolutely stunning. Loved it. Loved the people. But prior to coming to Panama, everything I was reading on the internet kept talking about Pedici, the beaches of Pedici. So I'm a water person. So of course I wanted to head to Pedici. So after about a week, 10 days in Panama, finally get on the road heading for Pedici. It's about a 4.5-hour drive from Panama City. Made it as far as Las Tablas. It was getting pretty late at night and said, well, we might as well stop. Las Tablas is this very quaint little town. It's the capital of the Azuero Peninsula. Has about 10 or 12,000 people now at the time. It's all Spanish colonial architecture. Las Tablas is the, to me, it's the cultural heartland of Panama. Everything that happens in Panama, on a cultural scale, whether it's carnival, the Parade of 1,000 Poyeras, that's the national dress of Panama, the music festivals, all of the things that are big and important to Panamanians happens here in Las Tablas. So during carnival, Las Tablas goes from a population of 10,000 people. I've seen it go as high as 350 to 400,000 people. So it's absolutely nuts. When that happens, actually a lot of the expats try to avoid town. We go shopping a week before and make sure we have enough to do us till about a week after. So when I got to Las Tablas, spent a couple days here before I headed to Pedici. And Las Tablas has about 5 beaches within a 10-minute drive. So we'd go explore different beaches, and every one of them we had fun with. Eventually, we made our way to Pedici. And Pedici is another cute little village, a lot of Spanish architecture. Remember, I arrived here in 2006. In 2006, there wasn't a lot there, today there's so much more there. It's turning into quite a little artist community. All kinds of expats there, a lot more than here in the Los Tablas area. In the Los Tablas area, we have about 85 expats. In the Pedasee area, I would guess 150 or more. But it's to each their own. For me, Pedasee was a little bit farther than from the doctors and medical institutions, stuff like that. So I ended up staying closer to Los Tablas and just tripped over a house. It was not by design. I became friends with a guy, and he told me one day, he said, listen, hey, Phil, I've got a house that I know is for sale in New Burrito. Would you like to go look at it? Well, sure, why not? It doesn't cost anything to look, right? Now, at the time, I was a real estate agent. I had been retired from the military for 6 years at the time. My wife, who's now my ex, and I were both real estate agents. One of the things we would always tell our clients when you're walking through a new house, don't show any emotion. Just be calm. Be cool. If you have any questions, if you really like the place or you really hate the place, tell us after we leave. So now we're looking through this house. We're walking through. We're elbowing each other. I love it. I love it. Love it. Love it. We want it. The view, the beach, everything about it. So we end up buying a house on the beach. That's probably more than the question you asked, Jackie. So you want to take
was
it
that,
from there?
Was that in 2006 when you bought the house on the beach?
I bought the house in 2006. I came down on vacation in October, and I bought the house about the middle of November.
Yeah,
and
you
I've
know,
been like
you're
a
absolutely.
Kid.
Yeah, there's 1,500 miles of coastline in Panama, so there's something that's just right for everybody. Some people like being a little bit more isolated, like Pedasee. Pedasee is a population of about 2,000 people now. Los Tablas has a population between 12 and 15,000. I've seen both numbers. I don't know which one's accurate. So some people want to be a little bit more isolated, and some people, especially as we get a little bit older, we want to be closer to a nice grocery store, closer to the hospital, closer to doctors, so that we don't have to get in the car and drive an hour to get to some of these different amenities. But there's something for everybody.
Exactly.
So in your area, probably whenever you moved there, there's 85, 100 houses along that street now? So that many?
Oh, yeah.
Weren't so many houses whenever you moved there. Some of them look like they're newer construction.
A lot of them were just, the Panamanians treat them, they call them a finca. It's basically a cottage. And a lot of well-to-do Panamanians from the city own properties in Uvarito Beach. But they would only get visited during the time of Carnival or Semana Santa, Easter week or Holy Week. And then during the Festival of Santa Librada for a month in the month of July. That's the only time these houses would be occupied. So they'd come down and 30 people would move into a house and they'd be living there. So what happened... Well, around the same time I got here, I think I was probably the second or the third person to buy. And everybody that bought, we were pretty well buying knockdowns. So whatever we originally bought no longer exists. And really what you're doing, you're buying the beachfront property. And since that's happened, right now on our beach, we probably have a mix of expats, probably 60% Canadian, 40% American, and there would be at least 12 to 16, maybe 18 people here. Most of them permanent, but we have a few seasonals that come down. Mostly the Canadians are the snowbirds. They come down typically in October, and they leave again towards the end of April. And that's pretty well the same mix with the expats we have living in the Los Tablas area. So we have probably 45 Canadians, maybe 30, 35 Americans, and then half a dozen Europeans thrown in for good measure. Another thing we do here, and there's pretty well everything you want to do. The only thing we don't have in the immediate area is a golf course. If somebody likes to golf, but they can go to Chitre. Chitre is only half an hour drive, and they have a fantastic golf course. It's very cheap. Greg, how much is membership?
$80 a month for unlimited golf.
Yeah. So it's, so like I said, that's only half an hour away. But mm-hmm. There's lots to do. You know, if you like beachcombing, I took up carving when I got to Panama. And so I just wander the beaches all the time, near and far, looking for driftwood. This week, yesterday was like a Christmas for me. I found about a 9-foot chunk of a cayuca or a dugout. So it's typically made of a hollowed out from one exotic tree. And I found a huge chunk yesterday, the first time I found a piece in about 2 years. So already my brain is going on what to carve from that. Yeah. Yes, there's lots to do. We do, we coordinate when we're not in a coronavirus lockdown. My girlfriend Gloria and I normally coordinate gringo nights twice a month. Normally in the middle of the month and the end of the month, we coordinate gringo nights. And for gringo nights, we'll have, as I call them, sometimes some people don't like the word gringo. It just makes me laugh. I mean, I don't care what you call me, but anyway, the expats or the Panamanians here do not call us gringos. Some Latin American countries, they do. Here, they just say foreigners. You know, it's just like they try to be polite in everything they do. Panamanian people are phenomenal in my mind, absolutely amazing. So we have gringo nights. Sometimes we'll coordinate dances when necessary. Sometimes we'll do a benefit dance for a local family that needs help with something. One of the causes we took on this year, there was a local Panamanian family with a 3-year-old baby needed cancer treatment in the city. So we did a bit of a fundraiser there, and we collected enough from the friends and expats around here that we paid for the family's lodging, meals, transport to and from the city for about the last 9 months, and we still have a little bit more in the kitty. So people are good at stuff like that. You know, the same as like right now during the coronavirus, Panama has taken extraordinary measures to take care of its citizens, and by extension, us as well, expats. They do not differentiate between us. But what is fantastic seeing is the amount of help that is being provided by everybody. Every one of my expat friends is doing something to contribute to local food banks, to feed needy people on our own beaches, in our own communities, in our own villages. The Panamanians are doing the same thing. I've got one of my neighbors is a wealthy female dentist. She went out and bought a whole cow, bought a whole pig, took them to the slaughterhouse and had them butchered, and then she went around distributing that to local families. So people, it's really good for the heart to see what people, how good people are here to not only their immediate and their extended family, but to neighbors and friends as well. It warms the heart seeing it.
Yeah, okay, we've had the same thing here. We've had the very same thing here in Boquete, and like I said, it just is. I feel so blessed to be living in Panama during this pandemic, and to see that's how good the government is doing, and to see how just the people are doing. Everybody's nobody likes it. Nobody likes the pandemic, but we're all doing the best that we can and taking care of each other. So it's very heartwarming.
Yep.
So I know some of the other things that you do for activities, Phil, is you offer some art classes that we've been fortunate that the tour group has gone by a few times whenever you were doing art classes and we stopped in to check on you. So you do carving classes and also mosaics. And you have people coming as far as Pedicee for that, don't you?
Yeah, I love all things art. Normally, when we're not in a lockdown, I teach carving every week. We have a group of regulars that have been coming for about 2 years now. And then periodically, we'll run courses for new people for the beginner stage. We also teach, I love doing mosaic tiles. So a lot of people are interested in doing that. When you come here, I'll tell you, the biggest thing I tell everybody, biggest mistake you can make is coming to Panama and not having a hobby. We're not finding a hobby, something that you love, because there's so much to do here. So I don't know. To me, the lockdown for the 2.5 months was a blessing. It just let me catch up on so much work. Carving projects and mosaic and so many other things. It was nice to have time to do all this stuff. You say, how can you not have time? You're retired. Well, I'll tell you, there's just so much to see and do here. It's unbelievable. My girlfriend Gloria teaches painting. She teaches etiquette classes to children. She teaches people, Panamanians and expats, how to do such things as seashell curtains, wind chimes, stuff like that. Right now, she's learning Arabian dancing, and she's teaching me salsa lessons. I guess I'm the guinea pig. She's Colombian, by the way, so she's got the rhythm, no problem. I'm Canadian. I'm a little bit more challenged when it comes to the rhythm. But we did some salsa classes the other night. I'll tell you, they were hilarious. They're a lot of fun. It's going to take me a lot of practice before I'll do it in public, but we'll get there. Yeah. And there's so many more people here doing it too. So we have American friends close by that do like stained glass or beach glass earrings and jewelry and mandalas and art and painting. And there's just so many things to do. And we have a fantastic time to do it when we're doing it. Tomorrow I'm doing a class on carving. And I have four students that will be here. Four of my regular students are coming up. We've been in quarantine 3 months, no carving, so everybody's been bugging me. So I've got four students coming to sort of stay within the guidelines. And some of it we're going to do remotely for other people that aren't coming. We'll do it by video. It was pretty cool. Everybody's excited about it. And everybody I know here is having the time of their life. It's absolutely, absolutely amazing. Like I said, every day I wake up feeling like a kid in a candy store. It's just absolutely awesome. It helps having, for me, my house is the beach. I'm always early in the morning.
You have some breathtaking sunrises from your property.
That's my favorite time of day. I just see things coming alive. You know, the pelicans start to fly. The grackles start to make their noise. Just waiting for the sunrise. The sun comes up about 5 after 6 in the morning. To me, it's absolutely spectacular. So... okay, Jackie, your turn.
so you come from Canada, and you've been in Panama for a long time, so you've gotten used to what's available and what's not available. Are there any things that you feel like that you have to do without because you live in Panama?
Jackie, I never thought of it, but no, there's nothing.
Are there things really you could get that you can't get?
Well, I'll tell you, the only thing I have difficulty with right now is because of the lockdown and the coronavirus. So my heart medication, the one I get from Canada, is not available in Panama. Mm-hmm. So I've arranged every 3 months my son goes and picks up my prescription. And actually, I should back up. I take 6 different medications, and of the 6, 2 of them are not available in Panama. 4 of them are available, 2 of them are not. But because I'm retired military, so I have a very good medical plan. So it costs me almost nothing to get my medication in Canada. So my son picks up my medication every 3 months. He sends it to a mailbox in Miami. And I deal with a Panamanian company. It's called Chitriana, to get it from Miami, Florida, delivered to my door in Uberito, cost me $11. So I'm tickled pink with it. They're very prompt. It takes about, they say 5 days, but it takes about 7 days to get it from Miami to my door in Uberito. So I'm tickled pink with it. Absolutely love it. So that was the only thing I was a little bit concerned with. But once I found Chitriana, and there's about 3 other places, like mailboxes, et cetera, FedEx, a couple other ones that I have friends that deal with. But I'm very happy with this local Panamanian service. Other than that, no, there's clothing here. I buy all my clothing here. I would never buy clothing in Canada anymore. It's too cheap here. No.
Yeah.
I'm like a liar myself.
Well,
the one thing I can't find here, probably have to order them online, is Birkenstock sandals. Maybe they have them in the city, but if they do, I haven't found them yet. That's about it. Everything else, everything I want, I can get here. I buy, there's a German beer I like, Fürstenberg. I can buy it locally here. And a lot cheaper than it would be in Canada. I buy... just to go against the trend, the beer I've been buying is Corona, but I like all the Panamanian, most of the Panamanian beer. They have probably 4 or 5 local beer, and now they're getting into the artisan market. So now we can get some local artist craft beer, and it's all pretty good. So wine, alcohol products here are amazingly cheap compared to Canada. products, fresh fruit, pineapples, watermelon, papaya. Right now, mangoes are in season. You can't buy mangoes. There are just too many of them. Everywhere you go, somebody will give you mangoes to take home. So we're stuffing up on mango smoothies and bananas. I've got three different types of bananas growing in my backyard. I have apple bananas, Chinese plantain, and national plantain. And they all grow locally, and they do very well. Our vegetables were a little bit inferior in quality, but now we have a new store in town. So with a new store and more competition, the quality of our vegetables, like potatoes, really, the quality has gone up dramatically. So now you can actually find very good fresh produce in both stores, not just the one, not just the new one. In both stores, they've gone way up in quality. There's probably, without exaggerating, at least 16 pharmacies in Los Tablas. Products are cheap. If you have the Hubalawa program, you get a discount on everything. I think it's a 20% discount on medication. It's either 20 or 25%.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think in Los Tablas, there's probably more shoe stores in that. There's more shoe stores in Los Tablas than any other town.
How amazing this program is. So, as an example, I guess with everybody living in Panama gets a hydro, or don't call it hydro, electricity, we get a discount. When you get your electrical bill, everybody gets a subsidy. Everybody in the country gets a subsidy from the Panama Canal Authority. So that's the first they knock off probably 10 or 15% off of your bill. And then depending on your consumption, if you don't use a lot of air conditioning, and we're on the beach, so we really don't use a lot of air conditioning, we get another discount. And then when that's all said and done, and I think there's another like a $3 discount from the government. And then when all those discounts are taken off, then we get another 25% discount from the Hubalawa program. For our electrical bill, prior to me putting in the swimming pool, my electrical bill for the house and two apartments that I rent was costing me anywhere from $35 to $40 a month. My water bill for the whole property, by the time I get the discounts, my water bill is about $6 a month. So really things, the utilities here are quite cheap. With the Hubalawa discount, if you take the bus to Panama City, it's regular $9.40. With the Hubalawa discount, it's $6.40. A hotel in the city, a good quality hotel in a nice area of the city that I like, $37.90 a night. That's during the week. On the weekends, it goes up by about $6. Because on the weekends, it's only, I think it's 50% discount during the week, and on the weekends, it's 30%. But Jackie, you'd know better that there. And you can use that for buses. Yeah. You can use it for air transport. You can use it for the boat. If you take the boat to Bocas del Toro, you qualify for the discount. So you can even actually, when you go shopping at the supermarket, if you use your Hubalawa card, you pull it out, you show it to them. That's all you have to do is show it to them. They'll give you a 2% discount off your groceries. I've never done it, but I know people who do it. You go to a restaurant, people go to McDonald's. A McDonald's special on, I think, Tuesday. Not that I go there on Tuesday. I'm guessing at this. On Tuesday, they have fried chicken. I'm not allowed fried chicken anymore. And I think it's like $3.90. So if you show them your Hubalawa card, you get another 25% discount off that. And I know people that do it. So to each their own, right? But I'm saying it's there.
Right.
So the country has a lot of amazing things here going for it.
So, Phil, one of the things that we hear from Canadians all the time is that they're worried about the exchange rate between the Canadian dollar and the U.S. dollar. But with all these discounts, it obviously offsets that exchange rate. Have you had any issues with the exchange rate? People are always so worried about that.
No, okay, Jackie, that's a very good point. Let me tell you how I deal with it. I've been to a lot of countries around the world. I've always had the attitude that whatever country I'm in, I try to have an income stream in the currency of that country. So in this case, Panama, using the American dollar, I go out of my way to make sure I have an income stream. So what I did, my property, I built two apartments. So I have the house and two apartments. And I don't rent them a lot, like now during the winter or the rainy season, typically. But normally there, I have a lot of occupancy during the summer when expats or when Americans and Canadians and Europeans travel. So that's a big thing I do. But the other thing is there's a lot of different ways that you can shop for your exchange rate. If you're only going to do the exchange rate, draw $500 from the bank every time you need a little bit of money, then you're going to pay the most amount of on the exchange rate for it. If you're going to do it, you're better off taking X amount of dollars, whether it's 10 or 15,000, whatever you think you're going to need for the year, and take it and go through an exchange broker. So one that I use for a large amount, like if you end up buying a house or a car or something else and you want a large amount of money, you'll save considerably if you'll use somebody like a Forex exchange. And the one I would recommend, I don't know if I'm allowed to recommend anybody in any program, but the one I use if I have to change a lot of money is called Knightsbridge. And they're excellent. They'll give you a far better deal than you're going to get from any of the banks. So that's what I do. But the other thing is here, you're right. With the discounts and with eating locally, like for me to buy yesterday, they had pineapples, fresh pineapples. And we don't buy a lot of our fresh produce in the stores or in the supermarkets. We buy it right in the street. Set up in front of all those supermarkets, there's trucks, and there'll be a truck full of pineapples. There'll be a truck full of watermelons. There'll be a truck full of papayas. So you just buy it locally. So you're supporting the local economy. You're buying, I mean, it can't be any fresher. It just could cut off the pineapple plant in the morning. And yesterday they were selling pineapples for $1 each. I bought a nice size papaya for $1.25. Bananas are almost, I don't know why, but bananas seem to be about the same price as home in Canada. They are about 50 cents American a pound for bananas. But here I like to buy the apple bananas. And I only have to buy apple bananas when I don't have any growing on my own trees. So they come in seasonals too, right? Actually, the bananas grow all year, but right now I don't have any being ripe right now. So when I need some, then I buy them. But they're relatively cheap. And that's the same for the produce. Anything that's produced in Panama is quite economical. It's the imported stuff that are expensive. Imported and such things as potatoes. So we'll get not the best quality potatoes, and sometimes we'll pay between 60 and 80 cents a pound for potatoes. But they have a replacement for potato here. If you don't know what it is, it's called yucca. Yucca is a root plant. Anything you can do with a potato, you can do with a yucca. It's fantastic fried. It's fantastic in a salad. Almost anything you can do with a potato, you can do with a yucca. So where a potato might cost 80 cents a pound, yucca costs 20 cents a pound. And if you look it up on the internet, yucca is about 10 times more nutritious than potatoes. So you're winning all the way around.
Yeah, that's the most important thing. If you want to reduce your cost of living, and especially if you're dealing with an exchange rate, is to make sure you're buying local. You brought up a really good point that I grow a lot of my own vegetables, but what I can't grow, like pineapples and things, I don't buy those in the grocery store. I either go to a little fruit and vegetable stand or the guy out of the pickup truck. It's the best place to buy everything.
We have, when the expats are all here, but typically from October onwards, and we actually did it this week, I have a couple local suppliers that call me up when they have fresh produce, or they call me up and they have fresh fish. So this week I got a call from the fish guy. So he had beautiful fresh shrimp, $3 a pound. Dorado, which the Americans call mahi-mahi, is my favorite fish here in Panama, and he sells it for $2 a pound. So he shows up. So what I do, when he calls me, we coordinate a time. I let all my friends on the beach know, okay, Amable, which is Mr. Friendly, seriously, that's his name. The fish guy, his name is Senor Amable, which translates to Mr. Friendly. So when he comes, I coordinate with everybody. Everybody shows up or they're ready. He goes up and down the street. He's got a little loud hailer on the truck. People go up by their fresh shrimp, their fresh fish. It's absolutely amazing. I have another guy. His name is Mr. Grape, seriously, Uva. And he brings fresh produce by. So he'll have everything in his truck. Pineapple, papaya, watermelon, honeymelon, peppers, cucumbers, potatoes, everything you need, really everything. And you're not saving a great deal of money buying it from these guys. It might be 2 or 3 cents or 5 cents a pound cheaper, but you're getting the freshest fresh, product. because they just bought it at that market, that money that morning off of the farmer. So it's absolutely amazing. And we do that about twice a week when all the locals or all the expats are here. Right now, not so often, but we're still doing it.
Go ahead, so, Phil, I've got two more questions for you. One of them is about crime. Have you had any problems with crime in your area or know of any?
I got to look for a piece of wood. Knock wood. No. Okay,
yeah.
Seriously. The crime that we have here at the beach is, I'll call it, crime of opportunity. So if you leave something outside that's valuable, don't expect to see it there in the morning. Now, having said that, I have two cheap hammocks that I have in my rancho, which are right, my rancho is right on the beach. It's not got no fence around it. Anybody can walk up to it and sit down. I have two hammocks that we use there, but they're not high-end hammocks. They're just cheap hammocks. They've been there at least 2 years. I take them in every now and then, wash them, put them back out, and never an issue. Anytime we have crime here at the beach, believe it or not, what they steal are plastic lawn chairs and propane tanks. The propane tanks, they can sell quick and make $40. And plastic lawn chairs, I just like them. I don't know. But so crime here at the beach, you know, you can walk down the beach, male or female, by yourself or as a couple, 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, whether you're walking on the street or on the beach, you will have no issue. Same thing in Las Tablas. You can walk down the road in Las Tablas at 3 o'clock in the morning by yourself, male or female, and I guarantee you will have no problem. Is there crime? Yes, we have crime. The only time we have crime is during the big events. During Carnival, when we go to a population of 350,000. During the Holy Week, when we go to a population of 80 or 100,000. During the Festival of Santa Librada in July, when population goes up to about 60 or 100,000 people. Crime goes up because what happens is the criminals come from the city, right? They just go where the money is. So as an example, during Carnival, you can't just not go to Carnival because you're afraid. So it's a recognized, accepted fact here that during Carnival, anywhere in the country, you're not required to keep your passport with you. You're not required to keep your official identification with you. If you have a Hubalelo card or a cedula, you just have a photocopy of it. And the government, the police, everybody, that's all they want, just a photocopy of it. Don't keep a lot of money with you. So that's the only time, and that's pretty well it for the area where we live on the Azuero Peninsula. So crime-wise, we're probably in the best part of all of Panama. Don't even go there. You'd have to do your own research if you're going to go to the Pacific coast around Colón. I tell people not to even bother going there. Mm-hmm. It's just not worth it. There's so much crime.
A lot.
It's unbelievable. It's not worth it. I've been there three times. And not really by choice, just things I had to do. And the last time was just so bad, I said, there's nothing can make me go back to Cologne. It's just so bad, the crime there, right? But that's on the Pacific coast, so you'd have to go back to Panama City, which is 4.5 hours from here, and then another hour over to Cologne. So that area, and it's a beautiful area, it's unfortunate. There's beautiful beaches over there, too, on the Caribbean, you know? But the crime factor in the Cologne area, in the province of Cologne, just forget it. Just, to me, it's not worth it. But again, to each their own.
Yeah.
Go ahead,
so
Jackie.
I think was it last year? I think you had some pretty serious health problems. And so tell us about your experience with the hospital and the doctors there in your area.
Well, I'll tell you, that's all right. Where do we start? It started out. I thought it was a lung problem. I was having a breathing issue, and I wasn't paying as much attention to it as I should have been, and I thought it was because of my carving hobby. So I create a lot of dust, a lot of wood chips, so I was having problems breathing, and one night it got really bad, and I was actually like unintentionally blowing bubbles coming out of my lungs, so it scared the living bejesus out of me. Of course, scared my girlfriend, so I made a mistake. I just went to bed that night. I should have gone to the hospital immediately, but we went to the hospital the next morning, and it turned out that what I was suffering was a pulmonary edema blockages in my heart were so bad that they weren't pumping blood throughout my body. They were pumping the blood back into my lungs. Well, that's not a good thing. Most people don't recover. Based on what the doctor told me, most people don't recover from a pulmonary edema. You go right into massive cardiac arrest, and that's it. Well, I guess it wasn't my time. So a hospital visit here for anybody, a Panamanian or an expat, or anybody in Hubalato, costs $2. The doctors here are amazing. I had to go see the doctor for just a regular checkup. Okay, I'm getting ahead of myself. So I went to see one of the doctors. One of the doctors I've become friends here with is, his name is Dr. Era. Great guy. I recommend him to all my friends. He's got a private clinic. You can see him at the hospital, costs $2. Or see him at his private clinic, costs about 30 or 35 bucks. And that's more at your convenience at a better time instead of going to the hospital. But waiting lines are never long at the hospital. Last time I went for a checkup, I just walked around the hospital counting, seeing how many doctors were on duty that day taking patients. And there were 37 doctors with their own office. This is at the hospital, seeing patients that day. That's for a city the size of Los Tablas, like you said, whether it's 10, 12, or 15,000 people. So to me, it's the hospital service, the doctors are phenomenal. Most of the doctors here are either trained in the U.S., Canada, or a lot of them are trained in Cuba, and they're all well-trained. A lot of them speak English. They don't all speak English. But if they don't speak English and they're having difficulty, they'll bring one in that does speak English. So any of my friends, I get them recommended to a doctor real quick, and none of us have issues. So after about 15 minutes, when I get in to see Dr. Era, he immediately scheduled a bunch of tests. So I went, they did a EKG immediately. They did a couple other tests. They probably 7 different blood checks they were doing. And within an hour and a half, getting back to his office after having these checks, he said, there's nothing wrong with your lungs. You have a heart problem. So then he scheduled a stress test and another test. I forget what the second one was. I had to go to Chitre for those. And for those two tests, they were performed at a specialized clinic for a cardiac surgeon. And those two tests, I paid $127 each. And then based on those two tests, they told me how bad my blockages were. And I could have had the surgery here in Panama, but here's how it would have gone. Had I done it through their social security system, the waiting line or the waiting list for open heart surgery was approximately 9 months. That's 9 months I didn't want to wait. And to do it in the private clinic, it could have cost upwards from $40,000. And I really didn't want to spend the $40,000. And at the time, I was still covered by my Canadian medical insurance. So I just arranged to go back to Canada. I took really the next flight out that I could. I get in and of course, I had to do the Canadian test. So I went in on the 18th of June to do a stress test in a cardiac unit in St. John, New Brunswick. And thinking I was going to be going home the same day, they booked me in immediately into the hospital, checked me in, and I had open heart surgery. So that was a bit of a scary situation. Did a quadruple bypass. They patched me back up. But, you know, my girlfriend was in Panama. I'm in Canada, and it's not really fun recovering from a surgery of that nature. So I asked the overall cardiac surgeon when I could go back to Panama, and he said not before the end of October. Wow, that was longer than I wanted to wait. So I talked to my actual cardiac surgeon, the guy that did the surgery on me, and we made a deal. And he said, if you're walking 10 kilometers a day, by the middle of August, I will let you go back to Panama. So within 3 weeks, I was walking 10 kilometers a day. I went to see him again in the middle of August. That was less than 2 months after my surgery. And he signed off on me coming back to Panama. I come back to Panama on the 28th of August. And here I go back to see about every 3 months. I go in to see Dr. Era here. Cost me $2 for his visit. And he schedules a bunch of blood work, and the blood work, he runs again about 7 different checks, and I pay, I think, a total of about $14 to have all my cholesterol checked and my liver and everything else. And everything's, we used to say tickety-boo, everything's excellent. My heart is excellent, but I still exercise. That was the hardest thing during the lockdown, not being able to exercise as much as I'd like, but I'm lucky where I have a pool. And we just managed, you have to exercise, right? So we found a way to do it. But I believe so well in the Panamanian hospital system here. I mean, it really is excellent. I have a friend here, an American friend, that had open heart surgery here, but he was covered by the American Veterans Affairs, whatever they call it. It's not DVA, whatever the American veterans are covered. He had a surgery at the cardiac clinic in Panama City, and his copay was about $10,000. So I'm still amazed. Like, it's almost a year now. A couple more weeks would be a year I had my surgery. And I'm just amazed every day I'm walking on the beach doing things that, you know, just who would have thought? So
it's a good
Jackie,
thing.
Can
it's
I put
a good
in,
thing you. Yeah, go ahead.
Can I put in a plug? Anybody that's interested, my girlfriend has a site. I guess my girlfriend and I have a site. It's called Our Panama Adventures. So it's where we try to put some fun into doing things here. It gives us things. It's really for our friends and a lot of expats. There's quite a few people from Jackie's group that are joining us. And just whenever we do almost like a blurb on something funny, or we just did one yesterday or the day before on mangoes, as an example, you know. So we'll do one on apartments for rent, because my girlfriend, we have two apartments here on the beach that we rent out, short-term and long-term. And my girlfriend Gloria also takes care of about 8 or 10 other properties on the beach and in town, that if you're interested in renting in this area, then one of us can help you find something. And I was a realtor in Canada for 18 years, and I don't have a license here, but if you wanted to buy something, I could help you buy something without getting ripped off. There's three types of ownership of property in Panama. I don't know if Jackie goes into it. She probably goes into it more on her actual tour.
On the tour.
But it really does come down to buyer beware, right?
Yeah, yeah. One of the things you really have to be careful of in Panama is, and that's why with the tours and with my new online guide that I have, I point you in the right direction of people that I know that are honest and ethical, because one of the things you have to worry about in Panama is something called a net listing, and that's where the seller might say, I need to get $200,000 for my property, and a real estate agent will advertise it at $240,000, hoping to put $40,000 in their pocket. But the same thing can happen with rents. If a landlord, if an owner says, I want to get $600 a month, this happened to my son. He looked at one property that was $600 a month, or $650 for a two-bedroom house in Boquete, and decided it was too close to the road. He was afraid his dog could get hit. So he saw another two-bedroom house advertised in the afternoon for $850, thinking it was a different house. He went and looked at it. It was the exact same house. But the real estate agent was advertising it for $200 more, hoping to put a little bit of extra money in their pocket. So people like Phil and Gloria, I know them, and I trust them. But you just can't trust everybody here. And one of the things you have to be real careful of, if you're Canadian, you think you can trust a Canadian, some of them you can, but some of them you can't. If you're from Texas think you can trust another Texan, don't count on that.
No, absolutely. Let me give you a quick example. You know, this is so funny. Just a quick thing first on the net listing. Net listing in Canada and the U.S. and Europe is highly illegal. You just can't do it. And it's just so wrong, on not only on the legal scale, but on the moral scale. It's just absolutely insane. So when I first came to Panama, I was renting a house here in Uvarito on the beach. And the house was for sale. At the time, it was for sale for $58,000. I made a deal with the owner. If he could get it titled, I would buy it for $52,000. So that was the deal I had with the owner. So one day I'm in town, and you know, we're a slightly different color than a lot of the locals, you know, so we're a target. So this guy comes up, running up to me, spoke a little bit of English. hey, amigo, I have a house for sale at the beach. Would you like to go look at it? I said, well, you know, I don't know you. Right. He said, oh, no, Liz, please. I'm very honest. You know, I have Canadian friends. I take you. I show you this house. I said, well, I'm interested in something at the beach. Sure, why not? I said, how much is it? This house is $85,000. $85,000 on the beach. I said, you're sure it's on the beach? Oh, yes, absolutely. It's on the beach, my friend. Okay, let's go. He said, well, I don't have a car. Can you pick me up tomorrow morning? We'll go look at it. Sure, no problem. I had a rental, right? So I meet him in the park the next morning. I take him out. We're driving down on this cow path. That's all we're driving on. And here on the beach. And I'm saying, where is it? Where is it? Where's this house? Oh, no, keep going. Keep going. I said, where is it? Keep going. Keep going. So we're driving and driving and driving. Where is it? Where's this house at? Oh, this is it here, right here. So I stop. I said, this is the house here. He said, yeah. I said, okay. I said, we're done. It was the house I was renting, the house I was living in. So the owner wanted $58,000. This guy was asking $85,000. If he had got it, if he had sold it for $80,000, exactly like Jackie said, he would have pocketed the difference. And it's an accepted practice here. I mean, how the owners would put up with that would flabbergast me, but it's an accepted practice here. So that's what the net listing whole thing is, absolutely crazy. So I just, he got all annoyed at me. He said, what's wrong? What's wrong? I said, I don't want to interest it. I'm not interested in looking at this place. I said, got him back to town and he was getting out of the car. He said, oh, please, I'll show you something else. I said, let me tell you something. The house you just showed me is the house I'm living in right now. I've been renting it for the last 30 days. I've already made a deal with the owner to buy it for $52,000. Why would I give you $85,000? You know? So that's what Jackie's talking about, net listing. And like, seriously. And I see it happen all the time. The one thing, it drives me. Nobody's in thing for charity, right? Everybody has to make a little bit of a living. But another example, I know people that come down here, they bought a piece of land, not even on the beach, for $100,000. So they paid probably $60,000 more than they should have. But they bought this piece of land. They liked it. Nice piece of land for $40,000, absolutely. Or $100,000, absolutely crazy. But what they did, they subdivided it into 12 lots, and they sold the lots to friends from their own community back home for $120,000 per lot. So think about it. The first ones I thought were getting ripped off by $60,000, and then they subdivided it into 12 lots and sold each one for $100,000 to $120,000. So exactly when Jackie says you should rent for a year before you buy, I believe so strong in that because it gives you an idea. It gives you the time to check around, find out who's trustworthy, who's not, you know, find out what properties actually go for, you know, their real value. Because no matter where you are in the world, there's a principle in real estate is called the principle of highest and best value. Why the hell should you pay $350,000 for a house because somebody's asking for it when you can buy a lot and build that same house for $150,000? So the principle of highest and best value says that property is not worth more than $150,000. If you can replicate it right in the same area, the same thing, for $200,000 less, what makes something worth $350,000? You know, so it just makes me shake my head. There's a house for sale here on the beach right now. Beautiful house. The guy wants $350,000. It's worth $200,000, $225,000. Not a chance in hell he's going to get $350,000 for this house. Just not going to happen. So a lot of the stuff that Jackie tells you, please take it to heart.
I'm just doing it to try to keep you from getting into trouble, help you avoid mistakes. Because believe me, I've heard about all the mistakes that have been made here, and I'm trying to, with the tours and with our online guide that we offer, I'm trying to give you advice to stay out of trouble and not spend too much money. And it's hard because sometimes, like if you're coming from Canada and you look at a beachfront property and it's $100,000 or $150,000, whatever the number is, and you think, oh my God, this would be $1 million if it was in Canada. And you think it's a heck of a deal, but it might not be a heck of a deal in Panama. It might be too much money. So it just takes time to get to know what the right price is. It really takes time to get to know if you'd like the weather where you are, because we have two seasons, the dry season and the rainy season. And you might love the place where you are when it's the rainy season, or you might love it in January and February, but hate it whenever all the rains come, or hate it in the dry season. So you need to really experience the area you think you want to live in through both the rainy season and the dry season to make sure you like both seasons before you make any kind of a buying decision. Don't rush into buying. Renting is affordable and cheap, and when the right thing comes along, then you'll know that it's right, and you'll know that you're not paying too much if you'll just wait for a little while.
The changes are so dramatic, Jackie. You know, like here in the beach, as an example, right now everything is a beautiful green, right? We're in the rainy season. Seasons here pretty well like clockwork change. So the winter or the rainy season here starts on the 8th of May, and it goes until the 8th of December. And that's like clockwork. Really, it's like you can almost set your watch by it. And then summer starts on the 8th of December, which is coincidentally is Mother's Day. But during the summer, I love the summers because we get a strong breeze. As of the 8th of December, we get a strong breeze off the ocean from the north, and it's amazing. So I can lay in my hammock. I don't need AC anywhere in the house. I can lay in my hammock, and a lot of times in the afternoon, I have to throw a fuzzy blanket over me to keep the chill off, you know. It'll still be 32 or 34 degrees, but the wind chills you down. But then what happens, like right now, we have no breeze. But the sunrises are spectacular because they're coming up between the sun's coming up between the clouds. We can have bonfires on the beach because the wind is not there. During the summer, we cannot have bonfires because the breeze is too strong. The breeze is like 24 and 7 during the summertime, which is great. I love it. My favorite time. But in the winter or the rainy season, like now, then we get to enjoy different activities. I have friends that have paddle boards and kayaks. Now is the time where they can enjoy those in the ocean. Just put the paddle board or the kayak in the ocean in front of the house and go paddle around. Drop a fishing line in the water, catch your supper. It's really not a bad life. Go ahead, Jackie.
So, what I usually do, Phil, is I open it up for questions from our audience for the last 10 minutes or so. Is it okay if we open it up for questions now?
Sure, I have no problem.
Okay. Next caller is area code 515. Go ahead.
Yes, this is Carlin in Iowa. Unfortunately, I missed last week's deal. But I did on the replay, the guy that was talking mentioned all of these neighborhoods. So at some point I'm going to come on one of those tours, and afterwards, would you be able to put me in touch with somebody that could possibly take me around to these different neighborhoods and for me to check it out?
In Panama City. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Even Bob Adams, the guy that I interviewed last week, he'd be glad to get a driver and take you around to those different areas. So, yes, we can certainly arrange that for you. Next caller, area code 281. Go ahead.
Hey, Jackie. And Phil and Jackie, I just wanted to tell you thank you. That was very helpful. My name's John Ashcraft, and I'm from Tyler, Texas. Jackie, I know you spent some time in this area.
I was at Calendar Lake.
Exactly. I listen every week, and I just wanted to tell you guys thank you. I suffer from chronic pain, from sciatic nerve pain, so that's one of my main purposes of really wanting to come there. And I'm not able to take the tour for at least another year. So I'm going to wrap this all into one question. What is considered long-term or short-term rent? Is it possible for me to start coming there and to enjoy my winter time in Panama for a decent rental price? I've looked up on CasaSolutions.com, and everything that I'm looking at for the Boquete area, I want to rent something for 4 months in the winter until I can do the tour. But everything that I'm looking at is close to $1,000.
Well, but if you were to look on Facebook at some of the rental websites on Facebook, that's where owners are advertising their properties, and there's plenty of rentals in the $400, $500, $600 range in Boquete during those months. The real estate agents are much more likely to only deal with the more expensive properties, but owners will be renting out their houses. Like, for example, my videographer that does my YouTube videos, he has a really nice one-bedroom that he rents furnished, all utilities included, for $200 a month. And you've seen some of the other videos on our YouTube channel of people that are renting nice two bedrooms for $400 a month. But they got those off of the owner that was advertising on Facebook. Or someone like Phil and Gloria, that they just know some people that have asked them to please help me rent out my house. But it's not walking into a real estate office. That's where you're going to find the better deals. Go ahead, Phil.
Go ahead, Phil.
You have to be specific about when you say winter and summer. I mean, they're opposite to what you think, right? So if you're saying winter, that's our summer. The summer here, the high season here goes from the 8th of December pretty well until about the 8th of May. So that's when you're going to pay more. If that's your winter, you're going to pay more. But exactly like Jackie said, if you look around, you deal with somebody local, then depending on what your requirements are, it's quite easy to find something in your price range. I guarantee you'll find something in your price range.
Okay, because my fear was, I fly for free on United out of Houston, so that's not an issue. So when I arrive, I didn't want to be renting a hotel in Boquete for $70, $80 a night, trying to figure out how I can find a rental as quick as possible, because I don't mind renting something for 5 months and then going down to the beach and renting something for a week and paying double rent. It doesn't bother me.
I would advise that you fly in and that you do stay in a hotel for at least 2 nights and go out and actually look at the properties that you're thinking about renting. Don't rent something without seeing it first, unless you send me an email and say, hey, do you know this property? And I know a lot of them. If you were going to rent one of Phil's houses, I've seen those. I know what they're like. I know a lot of the rentals in Boquete. But for you to just rent something without seeing it first, you might be disappointed. Just of the area that some of the houses are in. So you might want to invest in staying in a hotel room for just a couple of nights and have two or three or four properties lined up you can go see, and then pick the one you want to move right into. Okay?
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks. So I'm going to take one more caller so we don't hold up Phil for too long. So area code 415, Paul, go right ahead.
I was wondering, I've heard that in places where the weather is very, very hot, it's hard to sleep. Do you have that problem at Playa Uvarito? Do you have to take pills for that? Or just how easy is it to sleep where you live?
Can you clarify what time of the year? During the summertime, so from December till May, absolutely not an issue. It's hot. It'll be 32 to 34 each day, like every day. Not a drop of rain during that time, from December until May. No rain, nada, nothing. But we have a strong breeze off the ocean, so you it's not an issue. You're not overly heated. We have a rule, generally, anytime we go to town, if we go to Los Tablas or Cheap Trade to go shopping, we try to go in the morning. Because in town, it does get hotter because of the buildings, the asphalt, everything else. So if we're going to go do shopping, we go in the morning so it's not too hot. Make sure we're back home by noon. This time of year, the rainy season or the winter, yes, it gets hotter. You sweat a lot. But I don't have to take extra medication. I still spend a lot of time in my hammock. But right now, I do have one bedroom with AC, and I turn the AC on for about an hour before I go to sleep at night, then I turn it off. So that's, to me, totally acceptable. So that's my norm here. So, extra medication or something, you don't need it. But right now, when we have rain, of course, the humidity goes up, and it's hotter now than it is during the summertime. Or maybe it's the same temperature, just feels hotter because of the humidity. Does that take care of your question?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Phil.
Okay, so Phil, I want to thank you so much for spending an hour with everybody answering questions about living in the Playa Ovarito area. Do you have any final words of wisdom for anybody considering relocating to Panama?
Words of wisdom would be to take Jackie's tour and to join us on Facebook under Our Panama Adventures. And like I said,
absolutely,
it's a fun thing. We're not doing this. We're not doing this as a financial thing. It helps us sometimes when you rent one of my two apartments and check them out. I don't even know if they're, I'll make sure Gloria puts them up, but we've got our own unique little paradise here, and the carving classes and the mosaic classes and the gringo nights that we coordinate with friends. And even on the between weeks, we coordinate games nights. So a different expat will have a games night at their house. And they're seriously a lot of fun. So it's up to you. You can be part of as much of a part of the community as you want to be. But we live here amongst the Panamanians. We're not in a gated community for expats or for gringos. And everybody here loves it. We've got a really good little group. So again, a plug
right
for Our Panama Adventures and Jackie's tour. Jackie's a phenomenal lady. The people I've seen come through here on her tours, every one of them without exception loves it. So do yourself a favor and take it.
Thank you so much, Phil. Phil, thanks again for joining us and sharing your incredible life there in Playa Ovarito. And by the way, thank Anita and Greg for helping you get on the phone call.
Oh, yeah. This is so cool. I thought I was going to have to shave and get a haircut, everything for this. It turns out it's just a voice call. So.
Oh, yeah, it's easy. Yeah, no, yeah, we can be drinking wine and in our pajamas and nobody knows. It's easy.
All right, take care, guys. Thanks, Jackie.
Thanks
bye-bye.
Thanks a lot. Yeah, and thank you for everybody that called in for the call tonight. I know that there were a lot of people that had questions that we didn't get to. If you'll just send an email to info@ Panama Relocation Tours with your question, I'll be glad to ask it by email. So thanks again, everybody. Good night.